Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Good afternoon, Petersburg. Here we are with In the Garden, and the long-awaited spring is finally here. It's real light in the morning. At our woods there over in Kuprinoff, the huckleberries just leafed out yesterday, and they've already got the blooms on, and it's just like a little fairyland in the woods. I'm was awakened by a sapsucker pounding on the siding right next to my bed early in the morning, and went out onto the porch, and the hooters were drumming away, and the ravens are pretty active, and it's like, yeah, everybody's waking up, and, you know, the harbor's getting busy and that. So it's finally here, and we're all excited to get going on gardening and that. I just saw Bo and Maria had some tomato plants for Scott, and it was just like, yeah, things are happening and that, and we're here and glad to be here, and really excited to welcome Daniel Tucker as our guest today and that. And part of the spring roundup is that Deb's been planning with the market board, and they're going to have their first event here on Saturday, and we'll let her talk about what's going to happen at the market.
Okay, so the market in Petersburg, Alaska, and on Saturday we will have a seed share as our opening board presented part of the market, and at the Helmy Jensen room at the public library from 1 to 3, we will be sharing seeds and knowledge and starts and other things. You can come and talk to people and bring seeds to share, or you can just come. The market in Petersburg, we want to foster community. We want to bring people together through gardening and through sharing their knowledge. And this is just one of the ways that we thought that we could do this. It's a little early maybe now to start having extra seeds, but you probably do know what you are going to plant. And it's just about 5 weeks until our last frost date. So now is if you are going to start indoor plants like flowers mostly, then it's a good time to start. Veggies, you might want to wait a little more. Depends on if the spring warms up or if you have cover for your garden, too. So what else? So my neighbor on Kuprinoff has shared some choke cherries, gooseberries, hawthorn, and hawthorn whips. Is that what you call them?
Yeah, if they're young plants.
Well, they don't have roots on them.
No, you may be talking about cuttings.
Yeah, cuttings. Okay, and cuttings and some apple scions, and they are all from this area. They're from either my next-door neighbor's yard, or the apples come from out by Papke's. And so these are all free for people that would like to try and start them in their gardens. I don't know a lot about this kind of stuff, but Daniel Tucker will also be at the seed share on Saturday, and he does know at least more than I do. So
thanks. I'll do what I can to help.
Okay. Thank you. On the 31st of May, we will be having our plant share where you can bring extra starts or maybe perennials or annuals that you've divided that you would like to share with other members of the community, or you can just come and see what other people have to share and talk to us. This event will happen at the Salty Pantry Keto's Cave parking lot. That is where the market will be held once again this summer. We've hired a new market manager, Morgan Ray, and the markets start on the 14th of June and are every other Saturday starting on the 14th of June. We are looking for more vendors. We're looking for more customers. If you have any homemade item that you would like to sell, we would love to have you come. We would especially like people in the food industry, because one of our major grants is from the, a food-related grant. So all of the aronia, the chokecherry, the gooseberries, they all have either antioxidants and stuff to, they are a very good source of vitamin C, vitamin A, and other nutrients, but they also make nice ornamental plants, especially the chokecherry, from what I understand. It turns flaming red in the fall and has white berries in the spring. And I'm sure that because you like to eat it, the deer like to eat it. Everything has to be fenced, but...
And where and when is the seed chair again?
The seed chair is this coming Saturday, the April 12th, at the Petersburg Public Library in the Helmy Jensen Room from 1 to 3.
Great. Okay, so we're just really excited to have Daniel Tucker here. And Daniel was on last year, one of our shows, and he's been pretty busy in the community doing landscaping and pruning and grafting and different things like that. And has said that he's willing to try and be the host for in the garden here for the rest of the year, which Deb and I are going to be trying to get out on our boat as much as possible, and I really appreciate him stepping up in that. Today, since he's going to be the host, I just kind of wanted to talk to him and get to know some of the things that he's done and what... his plans are for his farm over on Icefield Farm on Point Agassiz. He's got a great website, icefieldfarm.com. He also has a free newsletter and that. So I just visited his website, which is nicely done and that, and gives a lot of information. So I'll just kind of turn it over to Daniel and ask him a little bit about his background and that, and what his hopes and dreams here are in Petersburg.
Thanks, Craig. My wife and I moved up to Petersburg a couple years ago in 2021 with our daughter, and we really love this place. Such a great community and a really fascinating part of the world, being here at the heart of the world's largest temperate rainforest. I grew up in Oregon and Washington and also up on the Kenai Peninsula in Homer. So I've been up and down the West Coast, the Northwest Coast most of my life, and it really feels like home, and Southeast always felt like this kind of mysterious labyrinth that I'd always kind of skirted around the edges of, coming up the inside passage on fishing boats, and always kind of thought, man, you could spend a whole lifetime here and not see all of it. And in 2013, I saw Petersburg for the first time from the deck of a fishing boat coming up the Narrows on a beautiful June evening, and just saw some smoke rising from some of the cabins on Kuprinoff, and I thought, man, this seems like a good place. And, you know, little did I know that some years later I'd be moving up here with my family. And, you know, I've always felt really at home in these places where the evergreen forest comes down to the shores of the sea, and the smell of the salt air is never far away. And, being somewhere with abundant rainfall is a really wonderful place for me as a gardener and a grower, coming from the last place we lived on San Juan Island, which is also really beautiful, but very, very limited for water in the summertime, very, very dry and rocky. And so I'm really excited to explore the possibilities of what we can grow in this place.
So you've described yourself as a permaculture designer. So that's with your landscaping and or is it describing what your hopes for your farm there over on Point Agassiz?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, permaculture is kind of a fancy word for gardening in some ways, but it embraces a really big picture view of things, kind of a holistic approach, thinking about how we can produce food and provide for our material needs in this place in the long run and create structures and a culture that can really thrive here over the long run. And of course, you know, like in that vein, there's a ton to be learned from Tlingit people and everything they've been doing here for thousands of years, and also other people in cold, wet parts of the world like Norway and Scotland and, you know, Patagonia, things that grow in those places. So it's a really big picture way of kind of gathering all these different threads together and bringing it back to how we garden, how we make our living here.
Well, one of the historical things that you're going to try and revive is having dairy cows over on Agassiz.
Yeah, that's a big part of our dream for Icefield Farm. My wife worked on a small raw milk dairy in Washington State and really loved the experience, and she loves making butter and cheese and yogurt and all those wonderful things. And so reading about the history of those farms when they started back in the 20s and 30s over at Point Agassiz was really inspiring for us. And, you know, from everything I've read, they were quite productive there for a while. And when most of those farms were abandoned, it wasn't necessarily that, you know, the farming itself was untenable or that the soil didn't work. It was more part of this larger shift that farmers everywhere in the country were moving to the city at that time. And it was just kind of an economic trend. But, yeah, we feel like the time is ripe to bring back more dairy cattle and more farming to Point Agassiz.
And another hope is that eventually you'll have farm stays and people can come out and experience, you know, what you've been able to build in that area there. I see on your website that you've got a yurt up now.
Yeah, we have a 34-foot yurt set up on our property there. And, yeah, the plan is to offer farm stays and what you might call like a wellness retreat or just a chance for people to really immerse themselves in a beautiful natural place and have a real rejuvenation with the wood-fired sauna or a mineral soak and you know, get a chance to taste some things that we grow there and just really experience the land in a really wholesome way.
So as I've been out and about in town, your name keeps coming up in terms of things that you've done for people here in town. And so right now you're doing landscaping and pruning and grafting. What kind of things you've been doing here in town?
Yeah, I've been getting into all kinds of different projects. It's been a really fun way to get to know the community and feed my passion for plants and gardening. You know, I built a deer fence for someone recently. Obviously, you know, the deer are hungry. That's a need. And coming from San Juan Island, where I had a landscaping business down there, and it was what some people would describe as deer hell. So I got pretty used to fortifying things against the deer, so helping people with that. And then, yeah, last year I had a little grafting experiment, got some scion wood from a friend down south and distributed it to folks that were interested, and have been educating people about some of the opportunities with grafting onto mountain ash, which is a very common kind of weedy Eurasian species, what we see around town, the Eurasian mountain ash. There's like one behind every back fence pretty much. But unbeknownst to most people, it's actually graft compatible with some varieties of pear. And, you know, it's related to pears. And then there's also other things that it's related to. So, like, there's a tree by the hospital that I used as a experiment subject and grafted scions of a different fruit variety on it there by the west-facing wall of the hospital. So I'm hopeful that that'll yield results with that nice warm wall that gets a lot of afternoon sun. And, yeah, just generally helping out wherever I can with garden projects, small building projects, and, you know, kind of bringing my insights, my love of plants, wherever it's needed.
So the best way to get a hold of you is probably just to go to icefieldfarms.com, or do you want to put out a
check
number?
Check out the website. Feel free to call or text me. I still have my old Washington number, but it's 360-622-5646. And I do free consultations up to half an hour. I love hearing about people's ideas and their projects, and love seeing different properties and gardens. And, icefieldfarm.com is our website. And, you can also email me, daniel@icefieldfarm.com.
Are you on Facebook also?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Daniel Rowan Tucker.
Great. And that number again was 360-622-5646. Great. And we all know that having any kind of yard help here is always welcome in Petersburg. And it's always a busy time in the spring trying to get things done. One of the things that I saw on your website was that you said that you'd like to do outdoor building using cob and natural materials. And I didn't know what cob was.
Yeah, cob is kind of the same thing as adobe. But it's like the old English word for it. So there's parts of England, like Devon, where people traditionally built with cob, but instead of making adobe bricks and then mortaring them together, they just kind of stack the – it's just a mixture of clay, sand, and straw. So you get this kind of sticky, muddy mixture, but then it dries out hard. And so if you've got a good roof and it's on a good stone foundation or concrete foundation up off the ground – even in a wet climate, potentially like here, it can hold up. You know, they've used it in some very rainy parts of England. And a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest use this. It's kind of natural building material. It's become quite well known in parts of Oregon and Washington. And I've built small cob structures and cob ovens, really fun kind of project. And that's something I've been talking about. I think some cob ovens would be really great around Petersburg. They're a really fun way to cook, and it's a fun small project and a really accessible way to get your hands dirty with that kind of project.
So Deb's mother built a clay oven in Belize.
Oh, cool.
And she was really successful. Well, she had a business where she cooked bread in this clay oven. And they're the type of oven where you've got the mass so that once you get it hot, it holds a very even temperature in that. Uh-huh. So is it once you make a oven like that and you build a fire in it, then it becomes kind of a like pottery that becomes fired?
The inside of it, yeah.
The
inside of it will become fired, but not necessarily the outside. And so you still need to have some kind of roof over it to keep the rain off of it. And you know, if it's in a spot that's exposed to the wind, you'd probably want a little shelter wall to keep like wind-blown rain from getting it super wet on one side. That said, they can work great in wet climates like this, and it becomes a real focal point for a garden. We had one on our property on San Juan, and you know, every time we had people over for a party, we were making pizza in the cob oven, and it, you know, it just drew people like moths to a flame. It's really fun to have around.
Cool. Maybe out at Sandy Beach or someplace we'll put one up and let the community.
Yes, yes. I put a bug in Stephanie Payne's ear about that, and she was quite receptive to it. So
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
A lot of great things happening with Parks and Recs and all the parks that we have out there and the new trail out there. It's really great. It gets people out, and that's you know, what we need here. So the other thing that was part of your philosophy is conservation. You have a term for that, and that was the
ex situ conservation. That's kind of a fancy Latinized term, but it just means growing something in your garden that's maybe endangered or threatened in its native range, and growing it in your garden or on your property as a way to help that species and you know, give it more a wider gene pool, and you know, also kind of paying attention to what's going on in the wider world. And so for me, there's a species called the monkey puzzle tree, Araucaria araucana, that I have a real connection with. It comes from the mountains way down in Chile in the southern hemisphere, but it loves cool, moist climates. It does quite well in Oregon and Washington, and in its home range, it's been severely logged and is really quite threatened. You know, only grows in these small, little isolated pockets way up in the mountains. But I think it could survive here in Southeast, and I have a couple seedlings. I've got 14 monkey puzzle seedlings out at Icefield Farm that survived the winter in open ground in some little nursery beds. So I'm hopeful. I'm quite hopeful for it. If it can take the cold, it should be quite happy in our cool, rainy climate. This is exactly the kind of conditions that it likes, and it's a really fascinating tree that can live for over 1,000 years and actually produces edible nuts, although not until, you know, about 20 or 30 years of growth.
Wow.
So.
Oh, so it's a evergreen, though.
Yes, it's a conifer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. We have a monkey puzzle tree in Belize, but it means because it's got big thorns on it.
So. Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah,
I mean,
that's
just
a
common name or something.
Right,
you know?
Right. Like, yeah, how would a monkey climb this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually grow some in Norway, on the coast of Norway. You know, it's pretty mild. There's some really old monkey puzzle trees, and in Norwegian, they call it apeskrek, which means like apes fear or apes fright, which I think is kind of a more dramatic name. But yeah, that's a fascinating tree.
Yeah, it looks very fascinating. I just Googled it, so it looks fascinating. And do the deer like it?
No. This is one thing that this, and it's a living fossil. So this tree evolved way back in the Jurassic period, and it had hungry dinosaurs coming after it. And so it is so prickly and spiny. It is one thing that I think you could really count on the deer leaving it alone. So that's a big plus.
That's a big plus, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe make a hedge out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you still have time to call in on 907-772-3808 if you want to ask Daniel or any of us any questions. Another thing that was on the internet and that's really interesting is that Ocean View Gardens in Wrangell, Alaska, is really going great guns, and I'm just totally amazed and surprised at how big they are. They've got thousands of starts, and they've already got flowering tulips and everything. They've planted a peony field. These people are really going for it, and I think in our changing climate here and the way that the freight costs in that, I think Daniel and these kind of people are really on the cusp of something great for the communities and for something that we're going to be is going to thrive and that we need. So I kind of wanted to talk about, you've got a bunch of different trees and shrubs here that you've kind of identified that are going to do well here, and brambles. Is that what's the difference between brambles and just our Raspberries?
Oh, well, you know, they're all in a genus, the genus Rubus. So that's raspberries, blackberries, salmonberries, thimbleberries. They're all kind of together. And there's some really lovely ornamental Rubus that most people don't know about. But I think they would do great here. There's this really beautiful one with the canes are like powdery white. They've got this white bloom on them. If you imagine like raspberry canes, but like a kind of ghostly white color. So in the winter, it's very attractive when you have a thicket of this. And, you know, just that whole genus, there's a lot of lesser known species that are quite interesting for the garden.
Another one that is coming back, we planted from last fall, was the a kiwi. And I don't know, do you know the what type of kiwi that was, Deb?
Ed Biarski's.
Ed Biarski gave us the cuttings. So it was it's with cuttings, it's like we got like 10 cuttings from Ed. And put them in sugar water and in a jar and that, and you know, two of them sprouted. So all those two, we planted them, and now they've survived the winter and putting out buds. Another one that Deb did that way was hawthorn,
mm-hmm.
And so that's two that you know aren't real common here, but something that can survive and hopefully do well.
Yeah, I hadn't realized until I started reading up that you can eat hawthorn berries.
Yeah, many of them are edible.
Yeah. When we first moved up here, there was quite a few more hawthorns than there are now. Hmm. And I don't know, you know, they just all died out. But, yeah, so it's good if they would come back.
Yeah. And that pretty much wraps up In the Garden for this week. And we're just really excited to have Daniel be coming back. And that, and happy gardening for everybody.
See you Saturday, 1 to 3.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Now if I was to change this life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed. Cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden, be much better. And I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.